The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod. A government shutdown looms again. House Speaker Mike Johnson says the latest spending bill isn't perfect, but neither is politics.
Democracy's messy. It's particularly messy right now in a moment like this, but we have to get the job done. And there are some very substantial wins in here.
It's a divided government, so something's got to give.
I think we have to get this done by the weekend because I think the stakes are too high.
What it sounds like when doves stand pat. The Federal Reserve holds rates steady, hints at future cuts, and says the inflation target rate of 2% might have some wiggle room.
We're back to transitory.
Mohamed El-Erian joins us on Chairman Jay Powell's comments and the impact of our central bank's decision around the world.
Remember the old PIMCO concept of the cleanest dirty shirt. If we misbehave and others misbehave more, we don't get punished because we've got the reserve currency.
Plus, U.S. regulators setting antitrust sights on Apple. CNBC's Steve Kovac explains.
This is a beloved company that is going to have a really stressful time.
It's Thursday, March 21st. The cleanest dirty shirt and so much more. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1. Cue it, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick along with Joe Kernan. Andrew is off today. The Fed's signal of 3 interest rate cuts still ahead this year, sparking a record-breaking rally for equities. The Dow, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ all took off after 2 p.m. Eastern time, never really looking back, all of them finishing at all-time highs. The NASDAQ was up by more than 1%, tacking on more than 200 points. The S&P 500 added 46 points to close at 52.24. And then you had Treasury yields, which were already weaker before we saw everything yesterday, heard from the Fed, Jay Powell and company.
We believe that our policy rate is likely at its peak for this tightening cycle, and that if the economy evolves broadly as expected, it will likely be appropriate to begin dialing back policy restraint at some point this year. The economic outlook is uncertain, however, and we remain highly attentive to inflation risks. We are prepared to maintain the current target range for the federal funds rate for longer, if appropriate.
Joe, what he said yesterday sounded to me like they're still being fairly patient in terms of when they're going to raise rates, but he took the idea of a rate hike off the
cut
table.
Cut rates, you mean?
He took a rate hike off the table, said these are the highs that we're looking at with this, but they're still watching inflation pretty closely.
So, now I sound like Kevin Warsh, starting with a so. But 6 months ago, they said 3, and people said, well, I think 5 or 6. We'd like 5 or 6, the market. So then we've slowly come to realize, oh, my God, we'd kill for 3.
Yeah.
And maybe we don't get any. So now when he says 3, we're like happy, but it's weird.
He didn't say 3. It was the dot plots that said 3.
Right. Yeah. But it's weird because the Fed is basically saying that these hot inflation numbers that we've seen for the past 2 months are transitory. We're back to transitory.
Well, yes. To me, he probably didn't want to switch positions, then switch positions, and potentially have to shade them back. He was trying to say as little as possible.
But people
Every
said this was the most dovish. This was much more dovish than anyone thought.
He had opportunities to sound more hawkish.
Only 400 points on the Dow.
I think you just don't want to flip-flop.
And Bitcoin, as you might not be shocked after the somewhat dovish 2 p.m. News that we saw yesterday, Bitcoin took off. It was down in the low 60s, now 67,000 today. Thank God you got bullish on Bitcoin, because there's still a lot of people that are just in denial. And I don't know when they finally, but that was about, what would you say, 2 years ago, you finally?
No, before that as well.
You did? All right. Well, I had an intro for you. And you know, I hate to waste an intro that they put in a teleprompter. But Mohammed Alarian is here, chief economic advisor at Allianz, president of Queens College at Cambridge University, and a Fed. Are you a whisperer? What are you?
Observer.
Fed observer. Did you think it was dovish, more dovish than you were expecting yesterday?
Oh, absolutely. And in two ways. One is a signal that they're willing to tolerate higher inflation for longer. And second, something that is flying below the radar screen is what Chair Powell said about QT, said about the balance sheet, saying that he's willing to slow down the journey to a lower balance sheet. I think that twin patience means that we may well look back on this week as the week in which central banks stepped away from a very strict inflation target to a much broader concept of an inflation
target. And this has, in your view, nothing to do with the election?
So I would like to believe the Fed in saying that it is apolitical.
You would like to believe? Do you believe?
Look, I have no other reason to believe otherwise.
Well, it was weirdly dovish, and I keep bringing up that suddenly it seems like the asymmetric risk is now of a recession after we've had two really hot inflation numbers.
So I was with you when you asked me what does the outlook look like. I told you 55% soft landing, 30% recession, 15% something better than that.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
And I think that they realize two things. I think they realize that the economy is weakening, but they've also realized, or I hope they're going to realize, that we are living in a world in which the supply side is the problem and that we need to tolerate slightly higher inflation if we don't want to sacrifice the economy. And I think that's the right thing.
Supply side is the problem because why? Is it because governments are still spending so much? The United States government is still spending so much money? I mean, it's weird to have fiscal doing one thing, monetary doing the other thing.
Correct. And we should be doing more to enhance the supply side. It is the problem, first, because of geopolitics. We are redesigning supply chains. Second, companies are emphasizing resilience as much as efficiency. So they are embarking on a more costly supply chain for good reasons. Third, the labor market is not as flexible as we'd like it to be. And then we're looking at a very uncertain energy transition. You put all that together and supply will not be flexible enough and the Fed will have a choice. Either it accepts slightly higher inflation or it unnecessarily tips the economy into recession.
What's to say that the inflation remains slightly higher and doesn't get out of control?
That's the bet. That's absolutely the risk. But there's been no evidence so far of de-anchoring inflation expectations. And markets are behaving in this way. On the inflation side, look at gold, look at equities, but then look at treasuries, and you get no indication of inflation expectations.
Like cross currents. We said that. There's a lot of animal spirits for the Fed to be worrying about a recession. And you said the economy is weakening. Well, I've seen two hot inflation numbers, two straight months. I've seen that. But now they're saying it's transitory again. I haven't seen, where's the weakness in the economy you're talking about?
Oh, you're seeing it in manufacturing. You're starting to pick it up in other elements, in the quits rate.
Then there's a lag and it's going to get, it will continue to slow.
It will continue to slow. And they're trying to make that slowing as orderly as possible. It is fascinating to me that when Chair Powell was asked about financial conditions, everybody that looks at broader financial conditions says, gosh, they are so loose. He dismissed that completely.
Liquidity is not evenly distributed in the system, and there can be times when, in the aggregate, reserves are ample or even abundant, but not in every part. And those parts where they're not ample, there can be stress, and that can cause you to prematurely stop the process to avoid the stress, and then it would be very hard to restart.
He's looking at a very, very narrow policy rate relative to other indicators, not at the holistic financial conditions.
Are you sure we're in restrictive territory right now, given the economic backdrop?
We are more likely to be in restrictive than not restrictive.
Okay.
But look elsewhere as well. The Bank of Japan surprised on the dovish side. The Swiss National Bank today surprised on the dovish side. You're starting to get a signal from central banks that I believe we're going to look back at this moment.
They all got elections coming up? Let me ask you, did you see what we're spending next year?
A lot of money.
$7 trillion. So Obama, first time ever, we went over $4 trillion. Then COVID. Pandemic, we need money. An extra $2 trillion got us to 6.9 or whatever. COVID's gone, basically. I mean, I still see, why are people still wearing masks? I don't know, maybe they got their reason. But why are we at $7 trillion? Why $7 trillion next year? Why?
Because whether it's the U.S. or elsewhere, we ratchet.
You never go back from the crisis
we
levels?
Don't. We don't. That's really
a bad...
Well, neither
look,
does the Fed's balance sheet. Yeah,
the UK is the same thing. It is sad. And at some point, we're going to pay for this. We will pay for this.
We have been saying this for so long, decades and decades. When does it actually...
So remember the old PIMCO concept of the cleanest dirty shirt.
Yeah.
Okay, we live in a relative world. So if we misbehave and others misbehave more, we don't get punished because we've got the reserve currency. And we are the place where people outsource savings to. So as long as we remain the cleanest dirty shirt, then we're not going to be punished. If others start being cleaner than us, then this will change. But right now, we are the cleanest dirty shirt.
I have a much better expression I can't use.
Oh, man, I don't want to know.
No, you don't. And I learned my lesson. I'm not getting canceled. So I'm not, because everybody has a, you know, has a support group for terrible people like me. So I'm not going to tell. What is it, dirty? That's a crappy one.
The cleanest dirty shirt.
Okay.
We used to use it.
You use different ones, and now it's an inanimate object. It's a shirt. It's dirty. You're not.
I've been using this one for a long time.
Best house in a bad neighborhood. I'm not sure you ought to be trashing bad neighborhoods. No, I don't. You definitely can't use dead cat
don't
bounce.
Don't try and turn around.
Huh?
Don't try and turn this around on me.
Gaslight.
I know you have something
Gaslight.
Worse in your mind.
Mine's really not bad. I don't even think the disease I'm thinking of is around anymore.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? But I still am not going to. It's very rare at this point. Maybe you still have it in Molokai.
Oh, I know exactly what. Okay.
Is that a bad expression?
Probably. I think your first instinct was the right one.
Someone just said it in my ear. Yes. Can I use that? Would you use it? I got
it's a good
baby.
Thing I have no idea.
I got
what
a baby,
about.
But he's not on air. He's not the person. I'm not doing it. Mohammed, thank you.
Elon Musk's startup Neuralink posting a video of the company's first ever human brain implant patient. The video shows 29-year-old quadriplegic Nolan Arbaugh moving a cursor to play chess on a computer. The company is developing brain control interface aimed to help patients with severe paralysis control external technologies by only using neural signals. Neuralink successfully implanted Arbaugh's brain chip back in January.
Basically, it was like using the force on the cursor, and I could get it to move wherever I wanted, just stare somewhere in the screen, and it would move where I wanted it to. Which was such a wild experience.
This guy wants to know if you feel like a wizard.
Yeah, right. It's crazy. It really is.
All right, that is really,
it's like telepathy.
Really,
it's
cool.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
And a massive improvement for so many patients. The FDA approved those human trials last May. Way to go.
Is this Elon Musk, too?
It is.
And the left hates Elon Musk now because he might...
I got to tell you, that's one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Out of all the things he does, what did he do wrong? He said maybe Trump's not Satan. And that's so you say that and the left hates you for everything else you do. It's so pathetic.
This is the thing I think I'm most excited about.
Well, I would be too. But we're going to Mars, too. I mean, it's just...
But the Mars thing is impressive. Getting back to the moon is impressive. But... For anybody who's ever had a family member who's been in a situation like
this. What, is this a hobby that he spends 2% of his time on and it's already working for someone to move a chess piece? It's really unbelievable.
Cheese will be next.
Still to come on Squawk Pod, a trip to Capitol Hill for an interview with House Speaker Mike Johnson, an appropriations bill to avoid a government shutdown, and lawmakers' plan to cut U.S. debt.
Our House Budget Committee passed their resolution here in the last couple of weeks, and it would balance the federal budget in 10 years and cut $15 trillion in spending while not affecting Social Security or Medicare. This is possible to do, but it takes very tough political choices.
Speaker Johnson weighs in on the 2024 election, support for Israel in Congress, much more. That's all right after this break.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan.
A spry Joe Kernan. Spry.
Andrew is off today.
You know what Geritol spelled backwards is, don't you?
No.
Lotteridge. Go on.
Lotteridge, okay.
No, it's Saratan. Nature's. Remember? Do you remember any of these? Okay, go on.
I remember. What is
Geritol is for geezers, and I don't take it. Go ahead.
Okay.
Earlier this morning, lawmakers releasing details of a $1.2 trillion package to fund the government through the end of the fiscal year, but there's still a chance for a shutdown at the end of the day tomorrow. Join us now, Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. Very good to have you on this morning, Mr. Speaker.
Hey, Joe. Great to be with you. Thank you.
Many questions swirling around whether you waive the 72-hour rule. I just trying to read the body language in between the lines. I would say that is imminent, and you're going to have to do it that way and go for two-thirds and get some Democratic help. But that does show that you can govern.
It does. We're in a moment of divided government, and in fact, historically divided. As everybody knows now, we have famously the smallest majority in U.S. history. I have a two-vote majority today. By next week, it'll be back down to one. But we have to keep moving. We've got to keep the government funded. We have to keep operating, keep the train on the tracks, and you're seeing that happen here. So because of divided government, it's not a perfect piece of legislation. It's not the one we would draft and pass if the Republicans had control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, and I think you'll see that next year. But right now, we're managing it, getting it through, and I think we'll avoid a long shutdown for the government.
Yeah, and certain members of your caucus wouldn't even grant you that there's anything in here, any wins. They call crumb. I don't know what they call it, but there are some things in here that you got done, and there were things that former Speaker McCarthy accomplished that I don't think he got credit for. He was going to keep the government open and do what he thought was right no matter what, and we know what happened to him, but I don't think that the will's not there to do that again. And I think you can do what you think is right. And you know, that's what, just like he had to do it, it's something maybe you're going to have to do. You can tell me, though. I'm not going to put words in your mouth.
Well, look, I say it all the time. Democracy's messy. It's particularly messy right now in a moment like this. But we have to get the job done. And there are some very substantial wins in here. 70% of this spending package is the Department of Defense. It's defense spending. And we all know what a critical time it is in that category right now. The world is on fire. We have unrest and hot wars around the globe. And our military, our troops are out serving valiantly, and they deserve to be paid for it. So in this package, we have the highest military pay raise in almost 40 years. We've also, at the same time, however, cut unnecessary and I think ridiculous spending. The DEI programs, for example, take a $50 million haircut here. So we can take care of our priorities and do the right thing. Another big piece of this is border security. You know, Republicans on our side, we want enforcement of the law. That's what the administration is not doing. So in this package, we're able to increase enforcement capacity. We're increasing the number of detention beds for ICE so that we can hold those who come in illegally. And we are supplying more Border Patrol agents, 22,000 of those. That was in our package, HR2, our border security measure. So some of our objectives are being met. Some of them are being done. At the same time, in this package, we're also cutting, rescinding spending for the IRS expansion fund, about 20 million of that, 20 billion of that. And then you got rescission of some of the other unnecessary duplicative spending. So we got some of the things we wanted. We didn't get everything we wanted, but we'll continue to move forward. And I think next year, a totally different process because we'll have the majorities in both chambers. I'm convinced of that.
So are you going to waive the 72-hour? Are you going to go that route? I'll tell you why I'm asking. If this is just what I'm hearing, that if you did give a delay, didn't do it, and let negotiations go on, I think, 43 of your caucus members wrote you a letter that they want this, they want that. You know, this is horrible. You're not getting anything. That's not why we were sent here. Out of that 43, I think one of them has voted ever yes on any budget whatsoever. So if you give them the weekend and you close the government and, you know, help the Republicans snatch defeat from the jaws of victory one more time when the big election comes up, what do you get for it? So will you do the 72-hour waiver? Can you announce that now, Mr. Speaker?
Well, look, we have to get this job done. The 72-hour time period is something, it's a principle that we all defend. I always have. We want members to be able to understand legislation, have a time to review it before they vote on it, one a concept. So everybody is reading this quickly. They're doing that. And we'll see. I'm going to talk to colleagues this morning. I think we have to get this done by the weekend because I think the stakes are too high.
But that will mean to get 2/3, if you do waive it, there'll be a lot of Democrats, and you're willing to do that.
Well, it's what we have to do in divided government. We can't get a rule done on this for our own party, so that means you can't have a bare majority. Remember, right. We only have a 2-vote margin. You have to get 2/3. And so, yeah, by necessity, you have to get both parties to agree to a lot of this, and I think that's what will happen.
And the demise of Mike Johnson, we've heard that many times. In your view, I said earlier that I don't think there's the will to go the same route as they did with former Speaker McCarthy. If you do it, you don't expect the same outcome, do you?
I don't. I mean, look, everybody understands this is difficult right now. They all pat me on the back and say they have a lot of sympathy, the hardest job in the world, all of that. It's fine. Look, I'm very sober-minded about
too.
This, Joe. We have to
too.
Get the job done.
I get that, too.
Yeah.
Your candidate, former President Trump, won't touch in, Social Security or Medicare. Even when he didn't even say that, but when someone implied it, Biden immediately came out with an ad that said, I'm going to protect it. So neither candidate is going to touch that third rail. Should we?
No, we shouldn't. And here's the way that we'll do it. There's two completely different worldviews on this. You know, the Biden budget came out. It would make the largest tax increases in U.S. history, about $4.9 trillion in tax increases. It would raise the debt to about $52 trillion over the next 10 years. We can't go down that road. We're going to crash the U.S. economy. We all recognize that. So what we present is the alternative view, and that is our House Budget Committee passed their resolution here in the last couple of weeks, and it would balance the federal budget in 10 years and cut $15 trillion in spending while not affecting Social Security or Medicare. This is possible to do, but it takes very tough political choices, and you got to limit the size and scope of the federal government. What a concept. We've been talking about that for a long time. There is a path to do it, but it takes tough political choices. It takes political courage, and I think you'll see that in the days ahead because, I believe the stakes are too high, and we have to save this economy, and I think we can, but it has to be the right policy choices.
There have been calls, bipartisan calls, actually, to bring together another commission to address this. Something like Simpson-Bowles, but one that has teeth, would be required to follow the recommendations of that committee. Would you support that, Mr. Speaker?
I have been supportive of that. We've been talking about it. It would be a bipartisan, bicameral commission. The catch is you want to make sure that they don't go in with the idea that they would be raising taxes, because I think raising taxes is problematic in a situation like this. I believe I'm a limited government fiscal conservative. I believe in the principle of reducing taxes on job creators and innovators and risk takers and hardworking families, and reducing regulation so you can unleash the economy. And this is not just a theory.
We just back up? If you are going into that saying, I support a committee, but one that only sees things my way and is willing to cut expenses but not do anything else, you're going to lose the bipartisan part of that. Simpson-Bowles was based on the idea that you would have to raise taxes in some arenas but also cut revenue, and that was how it was bipartisan, how you'd be able to get along with it. Could you see something like Simpson-Bowles, but that again also had teeth and would be required to follow the recommendations of that panel?
I think there's a thoughtful discussion that needs to be had here and everything reviewed. But at the end of the day, I believe our principles are the ones that need to be presented. And what we did in the Trump administration is exactly that. The first 2 years, you know, by the end of before COVID, right, beginning of 2020, we had the greatest economy in the history of the world, not just the U.S. And the reason is because we actually implemented these policies, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. The regulatory reforms were transformative for the economy. We were onshoring again, manufacturing here. People were out growing businesses, adding jobs, and you had an increase in every demographic in the country. All boats were rising at the same time. And then President Biden comes in and reflexively, post-COVID, does exactly the opposite. And that's why we're in the situation we're in right now. These are policy choices that put us here, and thus policy choices that can turn us back. And I look forward to that. I don't think November can get here soon enough. We start the next Congress in January, and I think you'll have unified government with people in the White House, the Senate, and the House who believe in these principles. And we advance those, I think we can turn this economy around. I really, really do.
Mr. Speaker, where are you on Ukraine aid, on aid for Israel? I know you were considering inviting Prime Minister Netanyahu to address Congress. Staggering comments from, I guess it's one man's opinion, but staggering comments from Majority Leader Schumer about the Prime Minister. You were considering it. You spoke with the Prime Minister as recently as yesterday morning. Are you going to invite him?
I would love to have him come and address a joint session of Congress. We'll certainly extend that invitation. He invited me, and I've been invited to speak at the Knesset there. I would think I would be the third U.S. speaker in history to do that. It'd be a great honor of mine. We're just trying to work out schedules on all this. But what Chuck Schumer did was just almost staggering, just unbelievable. To suggest to our strongest ally in the Middle East, the only stable democracy, that he knows better how to run their democracy is just patently absurd. I mean, imagine if I came on your show this morning and called for a regime change in Ukraine in the middle of their crisis, fighting for their very survival. That's what Israel's facing right now. And for the leader of the Senate to say such a thing was just outrageous. And I think it was received that way in Israel. I don't think they appreciate that very much. And it sends a terrible signal to our allies and our enemies around the world. So I wish Schumer'd keep his comments to himself on all that.
Well, he'd have to.
We have to present.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Speaker. Wouldn't he have to buy in on the Prime Minister speaking to Congress? Do you know whether that, he wouldn't say no, would he?
Well, I guess we'll find out. I mean, look, I'm the one that extends the invitations to speak in the House, and if we just have the House, that's fine too. But I think a big majority of that Senate would want to come and stand in support of Netanyahu and Israel. I think it's a really, really critical time for that nation. They're fighting for their very existence. We need to stand strong with them. And we've passed resolutions to do so. I've attempted twice to get the Israel funding piece done. We will turn to the supplemental and all those issues immediately upon the appropriations being done. And as we've discussed, that's what's happening today and over by the weekend. And so we'll address that. We'll look at it. We have lots of thoughtful conversations here on different routes to handle all of that. And I won't show all the cards this morning, but they're ideas, very thoughtful ideas on how to do it. And I think we'll get the job done, and we'll project strength because, you know, we maintain peace through strength. That's an old Reagan admonition and one that we still believe in.
You saw the President Biden's State of the Union and his view or and his impression of where we are in time right now as a nation, and then, you know, there are our views probably that are diametrically opposed to a lot of the stuff the president said at the State of the Union. If President Biden were to win re-election, what does that look like for the relationship between your party, the GOP, and for the next 4 years? It just paints a pretty bleak picture on where we would be, does it not?
I think it does. I think 4 more years of Biden-Harris policies would be disastrous for America.
But we wouldn't anything done, I don't think, Mr. Speaker. Your own party is tough enough. I mean, I can't even imagine what we would accomplish with all these very, very serious and weighty issues that we have in foreign policy and domestic policy.
Yeah, I don't think you're overstating that, Joe. It's a serious problem. I don't think America wants to go down that road. President Biden has a 36% approval rating right now. It's the lowest of anyone ever running for re-election. I don't think he will be re-elected because people are feeling the pain of these policy choices. The wide open border, the economy in the tank, crime through the roof. I mean, people are feeling unstable and insecure, and that's because of the lack of leadership from the White House and the Senate Democrats, frankly. I think because of that, I've been to over 20 states now over the last several weeks. weeks, just campaigning with our challengers in these races we're going to flip for the House and with our incumbents. And I'm telling you, there is an energy out there in the base that's not even fully registering on the polls. People are anxious, they are deeply concerned, and they are ready to vote for change. And I think they're going to give us the levers of power, and I do genuinely believe we can fix this. I think America's best days are ahead of us, I really do. But we have to have a difference in the direction, and I think this election is going to provide us that opportunity.
I didn't get to talk to you about the EV, the latest gas type stuff. You got one yet, Mr. Speaker? You driving around in a Tesla
As we say in North Louisiana, that dog don't hunt. We don't do that. We drive pickup trucks, and we're going to keep doing it no matter what AOC and Biden say.
All right. Well, it's been a while since we've seen you, and thanks for all the time this morning, and hope to see you again soon.
Thank you, my friend. Good to see you.
Next on Squawk Pod, the war on big tech. The Department of Justice is preparing to sue Apple for antitrust violations, saying it's blocking its rivals from iPhone features. Our Steve Kovac on the stakes for the nearly $3 trillion company.
If it goes after the App Store in a very significant way, then they're probably not going to want to settle.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
You're listening to Squawk Pod. Here's Joe Kernan.
Stand by, Joe. His mic, cue.
Shares of Apple are under pressure this morning. Bloomberg reporting that the Department of Justice could soon sue the tech giant, maybe today, as soon as today, for allegedly violating antitrust laws, which are they not in the eye of the beholder more than ever these days? Steve Kovac.
With this DOJ, yes.
Yeah, with this DOJ. Yeah. Joins us now with more.
Yeah, I think the big thing we should be looking for, if this lawsuit does in fact happen, is then where the App Store falls in, because there's this idea that this Epic Games lawsuit that worked its way through the courts, whether or not that kind of resolved the issue about the App Store dominance, that whole thing, the payments that they collect from the developers and so forth. So to what degree does the DOJ go after the App Store, huge lucrative business? But beyond that, there are some like subcategories that they're likely going to go after too. The payments. Also, are you guys, the AirTags, those little...
I've got a few of them.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with them.
So there's this company called Tile that makes a competing product. Companies like that, they are upset because they don't get necessarily full access to iOS and all the same features a product like AirTag.
Can I have my dog swallow it?
Yeah, people put them on their dogs. But
they do,
yeah.
But not so.
You're not supposed to do that, but...
Why?
That's what they say. You're not supposed to track your pets or people.
Kid.
They don't want to be responsible.
People put it on their kids' backpacks.
Yeah, on the backpack is a good idea.
Yeah, they do that.
So there was a headline from NPR September of last year. United States takes on Google in biggest tech monopoly trial of the 21st century. Does this top that?
Yeah, I feel like it does, at least thematically. I mean, first of all, Apple is a bigger company, hands down. It's a more beloved brand. And here you have the full force of the Department of Justice coming after their own, our own company. And it's also happening at a really interesting time, if you think about it. We're at the cusp of this AI revolution. There's this idea that, Apple is behind on AI, doesn't have a coherent story or a good consumer-facing product. And then let's rewind back to a couple decades ago when Microsoft was going through this at the cusp of the mobile revolution.
Right.
And people were saying, oh, they missed out on this because the government went after Microsoft and therefore they missed the mobile revolution and so forth.
Bill Gates has said that.
Bill Gates has said that.
He had his eye off the ball. He was focused much more on
exactly.
Washington.
And so then you got to wonder, does this become a distraction for Apple?
In the middle of the AI revolution.
Exactly.
Where it seems like Apple is a little behind.
Exactly. And that's going to be like a big theme I'm going to be following over the next couple years as this plays out in the court. Does this distract them to the point where they can't execute whatever AI vision that they have?
Is that an argument for a settlement for Apple to say, okay, we'll just do what we've already done with the EU anyway?
It depends on what the lawsuit says. Again, if it goes after the App Store in a very significant way, the way the EU has already done it, then they're probably not going to want to settle. They're going to want to fight it tooth and nail. But if it's more minor things that they've already conceded in the EU, like, opening up the NFC for different payment processors, or, you know, making it so different smartwatches could connect better to the iPhone, you know, non-Apple watches and things like that, maybe they concede that. And then, you know, they can move forward with what they want to do. But, you know, we've seen them fight everything.
It is really weird, though. You pointed out that this is such a beloved company for consumers to see antitrust go after a company where it doesn't look like there are complaints. I mean, there are complaints from competitors.
Of course. They're the angry ones, the developers. And so,
why it's Department of Justice?
The Department of Justice FTC? Has to make the, exactly. Yeah. They have to make this case that, you know, there's consumer harm and so forth. I'll give you an example. Beloved company. It's not just here in the United States. Right now, Tim Cook is in Shanghai opening up their second biggest store that they've ever did, their most expensive store next to the one up on Fifth Avenue. Our Eunice Yoon was just emailing me. 1,000 people showed up. I just saw a picture of a guy wearing a Vision Pro trying to meet Tim Cook. This is a beloved company that is going to have a really stressful time. And they're taking these PR blunders also with all these regulatory moves and fighting it. And the EU, they have kind of, you know, dirt on their face with the way they've been handling some of those regulations. So, you know, the lessons learned over there that they're going to have to apply once this lawsuit drops. This is a big deal.
Wow.
You're thinking of other inappropriate jokes, I can tell.
No, not inappropriate jokes. A great song called Sunday Morning, coming down Johnny Cash. I woke up one Sunday morning, no way to hold my head that didn't hurt. The beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had another one for dessert. Then I fumbled in my closet through my clothes and found my cleanest dirty shirt.
Oh, Muhammad's cleanest.
Muhammad's
shirt.
Cleanest dirty shirt is maybe worth using.
And I bet it's made of Under Armour.
Chris Christopherson, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Johnny Cash. All right. No, I was listening.
I'm sure. You weren't looking at Twitter.
I was not looking at things, but that's where Cleanest Dirty Shirt. That's a great song. Thanks.
Who wrote it, Chris Christopherson or Johnny Cash?
I think they wrote it together because it says song by Johnny Cash, but songwriters Chris Christopherson. So 1972. Were you born?
I wasn't.
Don't answer. You were not.
I'm 85.
You
I was born in 85.
You were born at night, but it wasn't last night.
Exactly.
And that's the pod for today. On our rundown tomorrow, Reddit's IPO, the social media site that fueled the meme stock mania, heads to Wall Street. And it's complicated. The mods, the memes, the money fueling the very anticipated IPO. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. Follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And tell us what you think. Please rate and review Squawk Pod on Apple Podcasts. That helps other listeners discover us. Thank you. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.